This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Connection is the greatest strength in the fight against suicide. Together, we can encourage those who are struggling to seek help and to know they're not alone. For free resources or to learn how you can get involved in their mission, visit afsp.org.
I'm Mariah Wolfel, in for Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stay to the end for a rundown of the biggest stories happening in Chicago. But first, eligibility changes to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, have left thousands of Illinois residents scrambling for food. More than 100,000 people have lost benefits in the past 2 months. And these changes don't just affect SNAP recipients. The ripple effects are being felt by independent grocery stores and other small businesses. Advocates say this is the biggest cut they've ever seen to the program in Illinois. Joining me at the table to help break down these changes and the impacts, Nolan Downey, Senior Director of Policy at the Greater Chicago Food Depository, Melody Winston, Senior Executive at Living Fresh Market in Forest Park, and Sally Schulze, Communications Manager at Refugee One. I started by asking Nolan for more information about the recent cuts to SNAP.
These are now the first substantial impacts that we're starting to see in the state as a result of the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill that passed last summer. Dramatically expanded work requirements in SNAP and enacted immigrant eligibility restrictions for lawfully present humanitarian immigrants. We're talking about victims of torture, victims of trafficking, asylees, refugees. We're now in the state starting to see the real impacts of these changes. About 16,000 humanitarian immigrants are going to be losing benefits over the course of the next few months. That's already started to happen as of April. And then, of course, the big impact earlier this month on May 1st, we saw 120,000 people in the state lose their benefits because of these cruel and ineffective expanded work requirements.
Give us a quick summary of these expanded work requirements.
Absolutely. So in SNAP now, people between 18 and 64 who are non-disabled, don't struggle with any type of physical or mental limitation that impacts their ability to work, and also don't have children in the household ages 14 or under, now have to meet an 80-hour-a-month work requirement or else they only get 3 months of SNAP in a three-year period. So this is a very harsh and strict federal policy that now a lot of people in Illinois are struggling with.
Okay. Melody, let's talk about your store. About a third of your customers at the grocery store use SNAP benefits while shopping. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the mood at your store in this past month and just throughout the year?
Well, as I was just mentioning to Nolan, kind of the atmosphere is kind of shifting a bit. There's this anxiety for people who are using their SNAP benefits, from going through the aisles to the register to anticipating how much, you know, they can cover on their for their SNAP benefits. And this leads out the store to home, to the family. So it's a shift that's happening. And hopefully as a store, Living Fresh Market can kind of help them pivot these times that they're going through.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. But Sally, let's bring you in here. We caught up with one of your clients, actually, Noor. She's using a pseudonym out of concern for her immigration case. Her family's SNAP benefits were cut off in April. She has a 12-year-old twins and two teens in high school. Her husband is the only one working, and she's struggling with the decision of whether to have her high school students take on part-time work. Let's take a listen.
The main reason we came to America, you know, is so they can study, have a better future and achieve their dreams. But I cannot force my kids go to work. And about me, I cannot go work because of my health condition. and I will need surgery in August.
Just a tough situation here, Sally. How many families connected to Refugee One is this affecting?
We are expecting this to hit about 850 individuals that we serve. A reminder to your listeners that refugees are here legally. They were welcomed to the United States after fleeing persecution, war, and violence. They are rebuilding their lives, and they're in a very vulnerable state. Yes, they're working, but if you've got a minimum wage job and you've got kids at home especially, it's virtually impossible to make that paycheck stretch to cover your rent and all the other expenses that are rising here in Chicago and elsewhere, and still have money left for food. So yeah, about 850 people, that's about 175 families. And what's really troubling is that it's hitting families with children the hardest. So they are scared, they're anxious, they're fearful, trying to figure out what to do. And they're facing the reality that they don't know how they're going to feed their children.
And like we said, there are these ripple effects. Melody, what has been the effect on your bottom line so far with SNAP accounting for about 15% of the money that comes into your store?
Well, you know, I've been watching daily since May 1st, trying to anticipate what shifts that we have to make as an independent grocer. And I'm sure that I'm not the only one looking at the numbers at the bottom line. But anticipating the 15%, you know, decreasing for our revenues and making sure, you know, the bills are paid, you know, the payroll gets done, everybody stays happy and glorified, you know, during the day, is something that we have to really look into. I'm hoping that the shift does not end up affecting the independent grocer to the point where we have to make cuts. You know, that's the part that I'm worried about.
Yeah, and independent grocers being such a vital, literal lifeline Absolutely. For communities throughout Chicago. Nolan, zooming out, how much does SNAP act as an economic driver here in Illinois?
Absolutely. Well, I think at the Food Depository, you know, the recipients are always the center of the story for us, but I don't think people appreciate enough just how important programs like SNAP are for the state economy. SNAP brings $4.4 billion annually into the state. That $4.4 billion also has an economic multiplier effect. It generates about $6.6 billion of economic activity in the state. There are 9,000 retailers across the state that rely, like Melody, on some of these revenues from SNAP. Over a third of those retailers are in Cook County. So SNAP is really a load-bearing pillar of society. People think if it's weakened, it only really impacts SNAP recipients, but that is not the case. If a program like this is threatened, that is a problem that is big enough that it is going to affect all of us in some way.
And Sally, obviously at the heart of this are the people who are losing their benefits. What do you say to people who think, well, it's reasonable, it's a good thing to expand work requirements, or it's reasonable to limit federal assistance to immigrants?
I would say these are families that are very similar to each of us, right? We want to be able to put food on the table for our kids. So they are working. They are trying the best they can. But they are starting over and very vulnerable right now. And as we talk about how this SNAP expands into the economy, it expands into their lives in some really interesting ways. I was talking to one dad. He's worried that they might become homeless because of this. You heard from one of our clients, Noor, and that's very similar to what we hear from a lot of families. The kids might have to stop going to school to get jobs. We are seeing families make that painful decision. They came here as refugees, and one of their dreams was to get an education for these kids. So this is impacting their future. They want to contribute to our society. They want to be a part of it, but now they're facing these really tough decisions that they did not expect here, because historically, people who are refugees who have come here have gotten this important part of the safety net. It just lifts them up so they can breathe a little bit, so they can keep their head above water. And now they are sinking under, and it's just a really painful time. These are our neighbors here in Chicago. These are members of our workforce, members of our communities, our faith groups, and we just need to be supporting them right now because they want to be here. They're so thankful to be here. They just need a little bit of extra help right now.
Tell us about what you're doing at Refugee One to help support clients right now.
We are working with each family that is struggling to go over their budget just to see if there's anything that can be done. And I'll be honest, though, it's really tough. If they've got kids and they have a minimum wage job, there's no wiggle room there. Noor, who you heard from, we were looking at her budget after paying rent in Chicago and your phone bill and your car insurance and all that stuff. They had $34 left over. That was before they bought any food. So those budgets are really, really tight. Beyond that, we are connecting them with food banks, but we know food banks are not the full solution to this. We can't replace a full government program with that. And we're also asking our supporters for gift cards. You can go to refugeeone.org to find out more about that. But we have emergency gift cards for grocery stores that we can give people when they're really, really in a pinch. But again, it cannot replace a full government program.
Mm-hmm. SNAP allows people to make choices about what food they buy based on allergies, preferences, restrictions that food banks can't accommodate. As you were talking about, just one of the reasons why food banks can't take on this massive need. Here's Noor, the client at Refugee One, explaining her experience.
The kind of food, some kind of food we cannot eat because we don't know how to eat. Like, you know, like being in the can and like sometimes and the chicken, no halal. But for fruit, onion, potato, like this, help me. And for rice, they give like 1 lb, 1 lb, 2 lb, like this. This is one day. For one day, I cook in my house rice, like 3 lb, like this. We have 6 people, all eat rice. This is, but it's okay. Yeah, food bank can help little bit for my family.
She's saying trying to feed 6 people on a pound of rice and there's not halal chicken. Sally, how much money was she getting from SNAP and is she losing now?
Yeah, she was getting $800 a month for SNAP.
Significant.
A significant amount. So imagine if your budget, all of a sudden you lost that kind of money. That's going to be a real, real hit. And, you know, I know her kids. She's got 12-year-old girls. They're very active. She's got 2 teenagers. She's got a teenage boy. I have a teenage boy.
They eat
a
lot.
I cannot get enough food for that boy.
Yeah.
Right? It's really, really hard. And she's talking about having a pound of rice. That's not going to feed them. I was talking to another father who's got a young child, I think like 8 years old, and he was saying now he's unable to afford a healthy meal for his kid, and there are times that he goes to bed without having enough food. And he was telling me, as a father, it hurts me deeply, makes me feel unworthy. He also said he did not expect this. When coming here, he's so grateful to be here. She's so grateful for the second chance to rebuild a life in America after being a refugee, but he's saying he thought it would come with support that he needs just to make it through, to put food on the table and keep their family together.
And feed yourself as a parent, too, because I'm sure a lot of parents are skipping meals in favor of feeding their kids. Nolan, our local food banks, as we talked about, they're not equipped to meet this increased demand. Can you talk about those challenges?
Yeah, food banks cannot replace SNAP. For every one meal that we provide, SNAP provides 9. So the program just operates on an entirely different scale than we can. And, you know, I think the relationship here was really made evident during the federal government shutdown that we saw in November of last year, where mm-hmm. SNAP was disrupted for the first time in program history. We saw more people in the 30 days surrounding the shutdown than we have ever served at the food depository in our almost 60-year history.
Wow.
And so that is not sustainable for us. We are very proud of what we've been able to do in moments of heightened need, but if those 120,000 people and the thousands more that will lose benefits over the coming months all turn to the emergency food system for additional support, there will not be enough food.
Melody, you're seeing some neighbors stepping up to support. How so?
Yeah, we, last October when the SNAP benefits were cut, we stepped up and our community stepped up to offer 60-second shopping sprees.
Okay.
So we had a lot of sponsors from the community who came and donated, bought gift cards for the shopping sprees. And every Saturday we would announce almost every hour a new winner for a shopping spree. So it gave them 60 seconds to throw everything that they could into their basket. And they came away with testimonies how they were able to feed their families, help communities, another household. So we continue this now. Even this month on May 30th, we'll be doing another one at Living Fresh Market to get more food on the tables. We're going to continue it because we understand that there's a need and we want to make sure that there is a dignified way and a fun way and a community way of giving back to community.
Okay. And Nolan, at the state level, the Greater Chicago Food Depository is pushing to bring the 16,000 immigrants who lost eligibility into an existing state program that gives food assistance to immigrant families. How would this work?
I think as a larger point, it's very important to recognize that while the federal government has made these changes, we are not powerless at the state level. Mm-hmm. So there are things that we can do that the state can afford that can help people now. So one of those is proposed legislation that we're moving alongside 90 organizations across the state as part of the Save Our SNAP Coalition. We could provide emergency assistance, one-time emergency assistance for those 120,000 people and the thousands more that will lose benefits because of work requirements. But also, as you mentioned, another proposal where we could expand existing state programs to bring in the 16,000 refugees, victims of torture, victims of trafficking who have lost SNAP and who desperately need that support. So we're really looking for the state to step up in places where the federal government is abdicating its responsibility. And these are things that we can do now and that we must do if we don't want hunger to grow unchecked in our state.
Sally, jump in here. What are your thoughts about this effort and how it would help those clients at Refugee One?
Yeah, we are definitely backing the Save Our SNAP initiatives. People can find out more about that. It's saveoursnap.org. Yeah, saveoursnap.org. And I think also right now people can use their voice. These changes started with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, as they call it. Tell your national lawmakers if you don't like that. And again, you can reach out to our state and local because there are changes we can make here in Illinois, and we are certainly backing those. Beyond that, I like what Melody was talking about community right now. We have a lot of people that are doing donation drives. So if you go to refugeeone.org, you can find out about how to do grocery store gift cards, as I talk about. We are also collecting things like shampoo, diapers, cleaning supplies, laundry detergent, that expensive stuff that if we can provide that for our clients, they have a little bit of that hard-earned cash then to use for food. It's a great way to bring together your neighborhood group, your work group, your faith group, and do a donation drive together because I think right now, again, our neighbors are hurting and our communities can step up to help in an immediate, impactful way to help out some of those neighbors here in Chicago.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Nolan, what resources are there for people to learn more about their eligibility and just kind of wrap their heads around these changing requirements?
So as Sally mentioned, folks can find a lot of resources, not only how to raise their voice, but also just information about how these rules are changing at saveoursnap.org. But if someone is listening and they're one of those people that lost benefits in May, the first thing that I would encourage people to do is go through the screening tool that IDHS has on their website and that they can also find on saveoursnap.org. Many, many people should be exempt from the work requirements. And so if you lost benefits, that may be a mistake. The first step is to go through, see if you meet an exemption, and it is not too late to submit that information to the department. They can revive a case that was closed, or you can file a new application to get connected back to SNAP again. But that is really the first step, and we encourage people to do that.
Okay, and on the state-level advocacy you were talking about, you're also pushing for one-time payments to people who have lost their benefits. When would this go into effect? And tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, so it's one-time emergency assistance, $600 flat per person that loses benefits because of the expanded work requirements. And we've designed it so that it could be implemented as quickly as possible by the department. By the time the new state fiscal year starts in July, we will have people that have already gone months without the SNAP that they need for their grocery budgets. And so the hope is that if our General Assembly passes this bill and our governor signs it, we would be able to get that assistance out incredibly quickly to families who, again, by then will be in desperate need.
Okay. And Sally, talk about the importance of, you know, a one-time payment. That's, you know, many people would call something like a Band-Aid, but talk about what that would mean to your clients this summer.
Yeah, that would help you this week, next week, you know, get you through the month. A lot of families are just trying to figure out how to eke through each day, each month. That would certainly help. But we are also backing the proposal that would bring these refugees and other people that don't have citizenship yet, who are, you know, working towards that but don't have it yet. It would put them back onto a program where they would be able to get the SNAP benefits back. So I think a combination of these two has got to be there because, yes, there's a little bit of a Band-Aid quality. Well, by no means would anybody say no to $600. That would be great.
Or to a Band-Aid when you have a cut.
Totally. We'll take whatever we can get. But we need to be realistic and realize that that's, you know, only going to get us so far. The other thing I will say about the clients that we are serving that are being affected by this, it's because they don't have their green card yet. Green card processing is paused. So they cannot, normally they would have had their green card at this point. They would have already applied. They are eligible. But that has been paused on a national level. So there's no end in sight to this. So when you think about that, it's not like they're going to get, you know, help really quickly down the road. So we need to be looking long-term, that this is, we need long-term solutions for a long-term problem.
And Melody, speaking of long-term, how are you kind of preparing for the long haul of this on the economic effects on your store?
Well, I think, first of all, just coming together with a team like this with Nolan and Sally, I mean, this is remarkable that we can all step up and be on the front line with this, caring about communities. I think more collaboration like this will help us all pivot and get through these times.
Nolan and Sally, do you think that leaders in Illinois are aware of the economic ripple effects of SNAP benefits? And does that provide a sense of urgency for them, too, in considering the legislation you're advocating for?
I think if they're not aware, they're going to find out very quickly. Because, again, hundreds of thousands of people across the state losing benefits, that is a problem that is big enough that we are all going to feel. And it is about more than just the recipients who are on the program. If locations like Melody's, who rely on, you know, these revenues from SNAP, end up closing down, that's whole communities that now have lost access to healthy foods. And so our elected officials can trust that if that outcome happens in their communities, they're going to hear about it.
Yeah. Melody, how can people listening be a part of the Good Neighbor Day activities?
So the Good Neighbor Day is a Good Neighbor Day America. So it's across America. It's a event where we are the arms and feet of Jesus, and we're coming together to be a good neighbor. So whether it's helping your community clean up garbage, whether it's we're doing grocery giveaways. We're giving away, we're feeding 500 families groceries on next Saturday. We're also having events where there's expungement and things happening, helping new businesses get off their feet. So we're all doing this at Forest Park Plaza on next Saturday from 10 to 4 p.m. Come on in, go to livingwordchristiancenter.com and you can find out more information. But just come on out, 7500 West Roosevelt Road in Forest Park. Just come on, walk on up. We'd be glad to serve you.
That's Melody Winston of Living Fresh Market in Forest Park, Nolan Downey of the Greater Chicago Food Depository, and Sally Schulze from Refugee One. Thank you all so much for breaking down how the changes to SNAP are affecting our local area.
Thank you for having us.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Connection is the greatest strength in the fight against suicide. Together, we can encourage those who are struggling to seek help and to know they're not alone. For free resources or to learn how you can get involved in their mission, visit afsp.org.
As promised, it's time to break down the biggest stories of the day. At the table to help me, Claire Lane, WBEZ Morning Edition anchor, and Courtney Kippers, WBEZ Arts and Culture reporter. We started with rising prices. New data out Tuesday morning show that inflation rose 3.8% in April compared to this time last year. Higher energy costs were the biggest culprit, some driven by the U.S. war on Iran.
This is the highest annual reading since May of 2023, wow, which I think just goes to show that none of us are imagining this. I mean, we've been seeing sort of these spikes incrementally. We had a 2.4% hit in February, a 3.3% hit in March, and now with the 3.8, it's like, yeah, this is real. We're all feeling it. I mean, I haven't been trying to spend money at all on anything. I'm doing a lot of free activities, browsing the farmer's market.
Hey, there's tons. We're going to talk about the Chicago Library in a little bit on the show.
You might see me hanging out at a branch or two in the coming weeks.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Claire, Chicago's Federal Reserve Bank President Austin Goolsbee was on Morning Edition last hour talking about inflation. Let's take a listen.
It's worse than what we were expecting for today, and it's definitely worse than where it's supposed to be. It's not going to be a secret to anybody who's an American consumer. We got an inflation problem in this country, and we've got to get it back down.
What's your reaction? This isn't a surprise?
No. And I think he's just sort of reiterating that this huge spike is going to make it way less likely for the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates at a time when, you know, that department is kind of in flux. Former Fed Governor Kevin Warsh set to take over as the chair, replacing Jerome Powell. So there's just a lot going on behind the scenes, and it doesn't sound like these rates are going to be easy to reverse.
Something we'll keep following. But let's stay on the money to credit cards. Illinois' new law cracking down on swipe fees is set to go into effect in July, but not everyone is on board. Claire, we'll stick with you. What are swipe fees?
Yes. So this Illinois law bans the certain so-called swipe fees. They're also known as interchange fees on the tax and the tip portions of customers' bills. So the goal is to lower the amount that credit card companies can charge retailers, essentially.
Got it. And are people fighting against this?
That would be the federal government, Mariah, looking to stop the law and a move that appears to favor financial institutions that have been fighting this law in court for more than a year. So this is an independent bureau of the U.S. Department of the Treasury putting out sort of an order to truly stop this law. It's supposed to go into effect, as you mentioned, in July. It was approved back in 2024, but the fight continues in court right now.
Okay, so there's a chance this might not take effect as scheduled on July 1st.
The battle is ongoing between Illinois and the feds. Just another one to add to the list.
All right, we'll keep watching. Courtney, another headline that made our eyes pop. Chicago arts workers are struggling. You cover arts in Chicago. Catch us up.
Yeah, sure. The results of the Chicago Art Census were recently released, and this found that nearly 60% of arts workers in the city earn less than $40,000 annually.
Wow.
This effort to sort of take stock of the sector grew out of the COVID-19 pandemic, and in the end, they heard from more than 1,200 people who work across the arts in different genres.
Okay, so just lay out for us why this is a big deal for Chicago as a city. Even if you're not an artist, why should we care about this, Courtney?
Totally. I mean, the arts in the city, beyond being a nice to have been cited as a driver for tourism numbers. The arts have been key in drawing people back downtown after the pandemic. And so it really is a key part of our economy in the city.
Okay.
And we should note quickly on Morning Edition that there's a new survey out that people that work in the arts and culture sector actually are aging more slowly.
Oh,
so something else to consider, good for biological signs of aging, actually.
Good for your mental health, probably as an artist and a consumer.
100%.
You know. What concerns are you hearing from advocates in Chicago, Courtney, about how this bodes for the future of the industry here?
Yeah, organizers I talk to are worried that if Chicago becomes too unaffordable, that these folks will move elsewhere or will look for work outside of the art sector. So there will be fewer people working in this really important sector.
And creating this, you know, diverse sector of our economy in Chicago.
Yeah, something we're so proud of. I mean, the arts and the artists who come out of Chicago are really something that is a point of pride for the city.
In your job as someone who covers arts and culture.
These ripple effects.
It's true.
Yeah, totally.
This is In the Loop. We're getting you caught up on the latest headlines of the day with WBEZ's Claire Lane and Courtney Kippers. Courtney, Chicago's Department of Environment is ready to go after polluters finally. What's the latest?
Yeah, this sort of revival of this department has been in the works for a little while, but the department now once again has regulatory authority. So that had been transferred over to the Department of Public Health. It's back at the Department of Environment. It gives the department the power to clean up contaminated sites, evaluate the environmental impact of government projects, respond to environment-related 311 requests, things like that. So the department sort of is getting some teeth back.
How big of a change is this?
I imagine this is one first step.
Yeah, totally. In a release, the commissioner, Angela Tovar, said that the department is committed to environmental justice. And so we will see if they are sort of able to make an impact here. This is a big and pervasive issue in our city. We have seen over and over again that environmental injustice disproportionately affects Black and brown neighborhoods. So we'll see what sort of regulatory powers this department is sort of able to flex here.
Okay. Claire, for folks who've been following the new baby eagles of Chicago, is there an update here?
Our little eaglets. The birding community has been in just a tizzy the last couple of weeks.
Truly, I love that sentence.
We've got the piping plover, Sea Rock, and Imani back at Montrose. Some great things coming out of Waukegan. But yes, we've got some baby eagles on the south side, and they are getting some extra security protection. Chicago Park District stepping up. Also, the South Deering Park District has officially restricted some of the trail access at Park 597 near one of the city's two eaglet nests. So this is very similar to the Montrose Protected Bird Sanctuary space. There are just places that you can't go. They don't want you to disrupt the nesting of these little eaglets. So Block Quote reporting anyone who is threatening to disturb these nests could face fines. Also threatening prison time, that's under a federal law, but just making people, you know, well aware of, you know, what the risks are if you do go in there with a camera, want to get close. But we should note, this is the first time in more than a century that Chicago has actually hatched bald eagles.
Okay.
Awesome. And we've got a few of them.
Is this going to be a unifier for the city like these animal stories so often are? I'm thinking Chance the Snapper. Different, 100%. But, you know.
But we remember these things. We hold them near and dear to our hearts. And it really does unify people. And I think the Chicago Park District, again, is trying to aid that even more. They're having one of their naming contests.
Okay.
And so it's open through Friday. I actually went through the process of just seeing what it would take. So you get to nominate three names for these potential eaglets.
Okay, do you have any ideas?
I was thinking something native. I would need to know more about the marshland specifically.
You want it to be meaningful.
Exactly.
Really go into your research.
And historic.
Yes.
Because you could do something sort of kitschy like we saw with you know, some of the snowplow naming contests and things like that. Yeah. Caleb Chilliams. Yeah. But I think it's an opportunity to maybe go the conservation route and talk about maybe some plants in the area.
All right.
A naming contest and an animal story, this city. I mean, this is our favorite thing.
It's just
thing
like,
here.
Are we going to be divided over the naming contest for baby eagles that could have united us?
I hope not. I hope not. But again, we'll let you know on Friday what we hear from the Park District.
Okay. Amazing. Any other stories you're following, Claire?
Something kind of interesting. I know you were talking a little bit about rapid response on your show yesterday during Operation Midway Blitz, Mariah, but some apps and social media groups that people were using, like on Facebook, to report ICE sightings in the Chicago area, those are no longer at risk of being removed by Meta or by Apple. So this is a federal judge's recent ruling, stems from a lawsuit filed back in February, essentially claiming that the Justice Department and Department of Homeland Security were coercing Facebook and Apple to delete these apps altogether and remove some of these Facebook groups that were geared toward just tracking ICE activity in and around the Chicago area. So the judge is requiring that the feds, Meta, and Apple all document now their actions to comply with this new ruling.
Okay, Claire, just a well of knowledge from your Morning Edition anchor
doing
shift.
What we can.
Courtney, we're at Navy Pier, and we heard some fun news yesterday for the millennials in the station. You and I think we're talking about here, getting a new summer attraction here. Can you fill us in?
That's right. We're going to have a retro roller rink coming to Navy Pier this summer, so we might need to take an outing here, Mariah.
Little field trip.
It opens June 18th and will be open through Labor Day. This is going to be inside the former Crystal Gardens at Navy Pier, which have been closed since the pandemic. And there will be skate rentals available on site, so you don't have to have your own skates, which is great news.
Hopefully it'll be affordable. Are you super into skating at all? Does it give you 80s, 90s throwbacks?
I grew up rollerblading, so I have not done the skates with, you know, the four wheels, so this might be my chance to get out there.
I remember rollerblading at my skating rink, so I don't know if that was a thing. But yeah, the four wheels are a bit challenging for me, too. I'm more of a blade
kind of gal.
Yeah, but it sounds fun. Some good music, you know.
We'll be trying it together
soon
enough.
Something to do inside in the summertime.
Yeah. Before we let you go, what stories are you following, Courtney?
Sure. Exciting one this morning. Patti Smith, the rock star, will be getting the Harold Washington Literary Award. This was just announced this morning. This is the annual award that kicks off the Printers Row Lit Fest. So announced today, but then she'll be in town to accept the award in September.
Nice. Thank you. That's WBEZ's Courtney Kippers and Claire Lane.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.